As we're continuing our study through the book of Philippians, Paul has been sharing with the church in Philippi the secret to maintaining a level of joy in life. And throughout this chapter, he's been dwelling on the fact that joy is found when we function in community. Joy is found when we get along with others, we work together, connect with each other as a family. And as that happens, and as we live that out in the body of Christ, we discover a joy that's not dependent on just things going our way. Because we esteem others higher, we're trying to make good things happen for each other, and it's a glorious truth. As he explains it all, he gives the example, the supreme example of Jesus Christ, and how being God, he didn't hang on to his divine rights and demand them, but instead he emptied himself and made himself a servant and humbled himself to become a man and to die the death on a cross. And as a result, the glory of heaven, as we get to share in fellowship with him, that's what came about. But now as we're coming to verse 19 in this chapter and through the rest of the chapter, Paul gives two perhaps more easily grasped or concrete examples of how this looks, of how we really can get along with others. And what Paul does is he talks about two of his dearest friends, Timothy and Epaphroditus. The people in Philippi knew both of them well. Epaphroditus came from Philippi, and Timothy was one who had been there with Paul and on his own, and Paul was saying he's going to come and visit them again. Two guys that were close to Paul. Two guys that Paul sets up and says, here's how things are supposed to work. Look at my two friends, Timothy and Epaphroditus. And as we look at this description of these two guys, we're going to see what it takes for us to create friendships, what it takes for us to be a friend, and how it is we can recognize friends when we see them, how we can develop those kinds of relationships that will put a joy in life that won't be there otherwise. And let's just read about Timothy and then about Epaphroditus. By the way, Timothy was mentioned by Paul a lot. We know a lot about Timothy. He was half Jewish. His mom was Jewish. His dad was a Gentile Roman. He was raised sort of with both traditions going on, wasn't circumcised until he was an adult, which takes a real commitment. But his name, Timothy, means honor God. And his mother and his grandmother, we know, taught him the Bible from a really early age. He traveled with Paul, probably got saved on Paul's first missionary journey, traveled with Paul for the rest of his life, basically. Timothy is mentioned in so many of the books that Paul wrote right in the beginning, where he says, Paul is writing and Timothy. Timothy perhaps was the one who was his amanuensis or scribe who was actually writing the letters, and so he puts his greeting in the beginning. We see that in 2 Corinthians, Philippians here in the beginning, Colossians. We see it in both of the Thessalonian epistles, 1 and 2 Thessalonians. We see it in the book of Philemon. On top of that, the book of Hebrews that I believe Paul wrote doesn't even mention Paul, but it mentions Timothy in the last chapter, his dear friend. And then, of course, there's 1 and 2 Timothy that were written to Timothy by Paul. So you see Timothy in six introductions and one conclusion, and two books are addressed to him, a close friend of Paul's. Epaphroditus, on the other hand, was someone who had come from Philippi. He was a guy who, contrary to Timothy, who inherited this name, honoring God, Epaphroditus' name comes from the name for the Greek goddess Aphrodite, who was, well, the Romans called her Venus. She was the god of fleshly lust, basically. And the word Epaphroditus means someone, the prefix epi means in close proximity to, supporting or against or on Aphrodite. And so he's someone who, no doubt, his parents, when he was born, it was their desire to see him just being somebody who's living it in the flesh to the fullest, worshiping the god of lust. and yet God gets a hold of his life. And when the Philippians wanted to send a gift to Paul, see, in those days when you were in prison in Rome, the state didn't provide you with any food or clothes or anything like that. Your friends would have to come and bring you stuff or you'd just die. And so the Philippian church sent Epaphroditus to Paul with a gift. And as he came, he stayed and began to help Paul. In the process, he got really sick and they thought he was going to die. And as we read in the passage, you'll see the love that they had for him and he had for them, where Paul said he was sick and like it was going to he was going to die. But he was really upset because he knew you'd be worried about him being sick. And I was concerned about you worrying about him, worrying about you, worrying about him. And so we're all miserable, so I'm sending him back to you. He's going to come home. And so you see the kind of a guy that he was. And Epaphroditus was the guy ultimately who carried the letter to the Philippians back from Paul to the Philippians. So let's just look through these descriptions really quick, beginning in verse 19. Paul said, "But I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state, when I know how you're doing. For I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. Therefore, I hope to send him at once, as soon as I see how it goes with me. But I trust in the Lord that I myself shall also come shortly. Yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus right now, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier. But he's also your messenger, the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed, he was sick almost unto death, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I sent him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice and may be less sorrowful. Receive him, therefore, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in high esteem, because for the work of Christ, he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me." Two guys, really amazing descriptions of guys that they knew. He wasn't building up some imaginary standard or even appealing to the image of Jesus, as graphic as that is, because he realized a lot of these people had never really met Jesus and couldn't connect with someone initially who's that has that kind of love. And so he points them to someone much closer to home, two guys that they knew well. And he says, "Let me talk about a couple of my friends, really good friends, and here's what they're like." And so as he presents this picture, it gives us several messages. First of all, it shows us what a friend is like. And that's really helpful because we all need friends. If you've ever been all alone with no one as a friend, you realize I am not geared to function as a solo act. I need other people to connect to. It's the whole message of the second chapter. And so, problem is, when we're looking for friends, so often we connect with people who turn out to be not very good friends. And so as we see what friends really are, it helps us to choose our friends wisely. But secondly, the book of Proverbs says that if you want friends, you need to be friendly. And so probably more important than helping us pick friends, this passage lets us know what kind of people we need to be in order to be friends, to be friendly, to be the type of people that will enrich others' lives as they enrich ours. But then thirdly, it's a reminder to us of Jesus Christ, who's the best friend we could ever have, who measures up perfectly to all of these standards. But let's go through again and pick out some of the characteristics that'll help us to discover what is friendship? What should a best friend be like? What should a really good friend be like? And again, as he's talking about Timothy, he tips us off right off the bat in verse 20. He says, "I have no one like-minded." He's saying that good friends are rare. That word for like-minded, the Greek word there, is the word psuche, which you know, we get the word psychology and your psyche and everything. It's a reference to your soul or your innermost being, who you are, your mind, your will, your emotions. Basically, the immaterial part of you, the part that makes you, you. But it adds a prefix to it, and it's isopsyche. And iso is a Greek prefix that means equal. Anytime you see iso in a word, somehow equality is implied in there. For instance, in the word isometric, metric refers to the measured amount of force, and isometric means an equal amount of force throughout the length of the exercise, for instance. So he's saying, this guy is isopsyche. He is my soulmate. He is someone that I feel like we think alike. We are connected on such a deep level. But he said, hey, I don't expect to have a lot of people like this. He is really unique. And I think you'll see that both of these guys were very, you know, special to Paul. Because, see, real friendship isn't what we sometimes call friendship. So often, and maybe there are some of you that if I say, do you have a lot of friends? And some of you go, I have tons of friends. I'm so blessed. I have friends everywhere. Well, I'm a little skeptical about that because real friendship, the very nature of it, is that it's a rare commodity. And I feel sad for people who think they have tons of friends because what that tells me is maybe they don't have any. They may have tons of acquaintances or lots of people they care about, but when it comes down to that deep connection, that soulmate sort of tie-in, maybe they don't even know what that means. But Paul is going, now this is, there aren't many people that do what I'm talking about. This is very unusual for someone to be the kind of friend that Timothy and Epaphroditus are. And so after he says that, I don't have anybody else that measures up in this way. He says, first of all, who will sincerely care for your state. A real friend doesn't just care, they really care, sincerely care. The implication of saying that he is so unusual because he sincerely cares, it almost sounds kind of jaded. It almost sounds like most people don't really care, but he does. And I'd love to believe that that's not the case, that most people really care. But you find out when the chips are down, not everyone really cares. The truth is, and it's just the way life is, some of the people who ask how you're doing just want to hear you say fine. And so you learn to do that. But there are certain people who really care in such a way that as when they say how you doing and you say fine, they won't take that for an answer. They'll say, no, I really care. You go, really? You sure? You sure you want to know? And they go, yeah, I really want to know. There are some people who seem to be wired this way, but all of us, each of us needs to put out an effort to be those who sincerely care. Faking caring, that's easy. We all kind of learn to do that. That's a function of life. But real friendship, deep friendship means, no, I really do care. I really want to know what's going on and want to be connected with you. But here's an interesting thing as you look at that verse carefully, is that I don't have anybody else like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. It's obvious that Timothy and Epaphroditus both really cared for Paul. But what is it that he says, this is what makes this guy so connected to me? It's not just that you really care about me. It's that you really care about others. See, we're pretty good at faking it. And so I know if there are people that have something they want to get out of me or want to be connected to me, they can act like they really care about me. But the way you really find out what people really are all about is if you see if they care about other people. Someone has said that if you're a good person, you'll be good to a waiter. Now, it's really easy to just ignore waiters or people who are helping you. And yet, so often we're in a situation, we go out to dinner and we're just totally devoted to the person we're talking to. But if we really want to see friendship, see how that person who's professing to be your friend treats other people, people who they really have nothing to gain from them. And you'll end up discovering that when you find people who really care for real about other people, well, that's someone who will also really care about you. That's someone who you can connect with also. And the fact is, like Jesus said, I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. And so if you want to connect with him, as he told Peter after his resurrection, do you love me? Oh, Lord, you know I love you. Well, then feed my sheep. See, he's not asking for us to just hang out with him. He's saying, if you love me, care about other people. I never know if somebody says they want to be my friend. I don't know. Do they really want to be my friend? You don't know. But if you watch how they care about others, you start to discover what their real nature is. And so Paul is pointing that out about Timothy. And he says, I love the way he cares about you. And it's obvious with Epaphroditus. And in spades, you see the same kind of quality. An example that comes to mind on this for me is Pastor Ken Krikak, who's one of our assistant pastors here. Ken's the family minister who does couples and men's and all sorts, children's ministry and all sorts of other things. And I've known Kenny for a long time, and I was excited when the Lord brought him from Kentucky to come out here and be a part of our church. One of the things I like about Ken is that he seems to like me. He laughs at my jokes. He says good things about me. He really, it's an irresistible quality when someone appreciates you. But the truth is the reason I'm so glad that Kenny's here and the reason I love to consider him as a friend is because of the way I see him love you. When I see him love people, when I can't be somewhere and he's there, he's off at the hospital, he's spending lots of time with people. See, I can't do everything. And yet, I love the people of this church, but I can't be there for all of you all the time. And so nothing is more valuable to me than someone like Ken who will love you. I don't say, Kenny, if you're going to be a good assistant pastor, you need to bring me a cup of coffee every morning. You need to wash my car for me and do my stuff. I go, no, if you love me, take care of those people out there. And he does that. And that's how you pick your friends. Don't look for people who kiss up to you. Look for people who are giving themselves sacrificially to others. Nothing's worse than to find someone who's trying to chum you up. Like, let's say you're single, and you're finding a person who's obviously interested in you. And so they start finding everything about you, and they find out that you have a heart for a particular ministry. And all of a sudden, now they have a heart for that ministry. Be careful, because if somebody's coming to church because they like you, or if you're saying, oh, let's go get some boxes for the kids in Mexico, and they're like, oh yeah, that's great, but they never cared about the kids in Mexico before they met you, and they've never really been in fellowship before they connected with you, how do you know that that's real? You need to give people time to see that they care about others, not just about you. And you want to find friends, look for people who care about others. As we read on, he says, the problem is with most people is they seek their own. Someone who's a real friend is someone who isn't selfish. You cannot be a self-promoter and be a good friend. Oh, you can add a lot to life. You can be very appreciated by a lot of people. But for someone who's really going to be your friend, look for people who aren't seeking their own, who don't love to propel themselves into the spotlight. Now, there's a psychological disorder called narcissism. It takes its name from the Greek myth about Narcissus, who stood there and saw himself in the reflection in the water and realized how beautiful he was and just stayed there until he died, looking in the mirror. But narcissism is a psychological disorder by which everything in life somehow centers around you. Every piece of reality is related to who you are and what helps you. Now, usually narcissistic people aren't ones who just say, I don't want anybody else, and just live totally self-centered lives. Narcissistic people quite often want to gather friends around themselves. Sometimes they have tons of friends because they need extras. They need, you know, Gladys Knight needs the pips. You know, they need somebody to back them and make them look good. And so quite often you'll see them buying friends or being very generous and trying to get people to be their supporting actors. Kind of like a quarterback who every time he has a game when he's not sacked, he takes all of the linemen out to dinner. That's not out of the goodness of his heart. That's because a quarterback doesn't like to be hit. And so that's the way a narcissist is. They'll do things for others, but always with the idea that I would look really good if you were with me. If you would support me, and if when I do something you would cheer, that'd be awesome. And so, but also the thing that you'll see about narcissists is they can't stand it when they aren't in the limelight. If you question them, if you just start to wonder, hey, couldn't I be the quarterback for one play? They're going to get mad and they'll cut you to shreds. Narcissists are the most vicious and at the same time the most incredibly generous and loving people in the world. And we often go, I can't believe it, they changed so much. The truth is, if you find someone for whom life centers around them, they may be nice to you right now, but they aren't good friends because someday they'll turn on you and it'll be awful, it'll be horrible. And we don't look at people like that and, oh, they're such sinners, I wish they weren't on the earth. It seriously is a problem, a sad problem. It comes out of insecurity and a need to try to feel like you belong. But it's always feeling with visions of grandeur that where you belong is on a pedestal with everyone else bowing down to you. Paul said, most people are that way. But he goes, that's not the way Timothy is. Timothy isn't going, hey, wait a minute, Paul. It's always Paul and Timothy, Paul and Timothy. Let's change the booking and how about Timothy and Paul? You know, he's going, he's not that way. He's not looking to promote himself. He's not using me as a stepping stone to achieve something for himself. No, I see in him a genuine humility, humility that the whole rest of the chapter talks about. And so a good friend is a person who isn't selfish, who isn't self-centered, who doesn't see the world as being there to help them and to promote them. But he also, as he goes on, he says, all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus. And here's the next principle of good friendship. If you want a friend or you want to be a friend, put Jesus first. Put him above everything else. I often tell young people who are thinking about what kind of a person do I want to marry and spend the rest of my life with, I say, the best thing that you can do is to find someone who loves Jesus even more than you do, who draws you close to him. And when you get close to them, you feel closer to the Lord, putting Jesus first. Now, I'll be honest with you. A lot of us, when we're thinking about making friends, this isn't our first thought. I want someone who's just totally sold out to Jesus Christ, and he is first in their life. Now, let me admit to you and explain something to you. We sometimes feel like, and it's justifiably so, that if we just look for people who put Jesus first, they're going to be really weird people. And it does seem like that when people just go, I'm going to put Jesus first, they can get really goofy. They can become really imbalanced and unhealthy, judgmental and superior and squash the fun of everything. And so you go, I'd rather have somebody who's just kind of somewhere in between. You know, I want somebody who loves Jesus, but, you know, I don't want someone who's stumbled by everything I say either. But let me explain that to you. Here's what happens. When you put Jesus first, you're just getting on the path and figuring out what life is all about. And as a result, you can be pretty klutzy in the early days. As a result, you can get kind of weird. Jesus wasn't that way. Nobody ever felt like when Jesus was around, oh, we better be careful what we say because Jesus might get upset and call fire from heaven. It was amazing some of the things they said in front of Jesus. And because he made sinners feel really comfortable. So putting Jesus first doesn't mean that you get really weird. But if you put Jesus first, you may go through a transitional time where you are a total dud. And you need to grow through that. And the problem isn't that you put Jesus first. The problem is that you put a caricature of Jesus first. But when you're looking for friends, let me tell you something. I would rather find that weird, zealous Christian and give them time to turn into a normal person. Give them time to figure out that you can laugh, you know, and you don't have to get offended by everything. Let them grow into that than I would to get a person who's just like, wow, we connect on so many levels, it's just the Jesus thing isn't quite there. Because the chances of that changing are pretty slim, pretty difficult. The chances of somebody who puts Jesus first, of becoming less weird and more enjoyable and comfortable, that's a done deal. It's going to happen. God has ways. If you can't laugh, he has ways of forcing you to laugh. He has ways of forcing you to deal with things as they are. He has ways of teaching you gently what grace and mercy are all about. He will work in that, but it doesn't happen unless Jesus is first. So if you want to be a good friend or you want to find a good friend, look among those people who put Jesus first, because Paul said, most people don't. And as a result, most people aren't good candidates for good friendship. As we look on, he then says, talking about Timothy in verse 22, he has proven character. You know what he's like. One of the things this tells us is it takes time. It takes time to get to know somebody, to prove their character, to decide, is this someone that I really can be a soulmate to? But it also takes time for us to develop as Christians to where we have something to offer to others. And he goes, hey, Timothy is a proven character. And how is he proven as you read on? He says, you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. So the next thing that he points out about Timothy is we're family. We are connected in such a way because I knew he was like a son to me. We were close and we served together, we worked together. The best connections that you'll ever make in life are going to be in ministry. You don't want to make close friendships with people who have no heart for serving God. Because if you have no heart for serving God, then how are you going to show what you're really all about? You're saying Jesus isn't first in my life. You're saying I'm more important than others. You're belying all of those other attributes of friendship. And so he goes, look, I've worked with Timothy. I know what he's like. We've worked alongside each other, and he worked as hard as I did. He cared in the same way that I do. In the same way, best place to meet friends is to go somewhere where there's an opportunity to serve the Lord. You'll make those kinds of connections. The best way to be a friend is to involve yourself in serving. Again, Jesus didn't say, if you love me, then worship me all the time. No, he's constantly going, serve other people. Now, worship is important, but he didn't leave us here just to worship. We have all of eternity to worship him. Worship is something that we need, and it's a wonderful expression of our heart, but worship is made real when you move away from the worship and you start serving and getting involved in ministry. If you're not involved in ministry in some way, I'll tell you one thing about yourself. You're not the kind of friend that you could be. And if you want to make friends, get involved serving God and look around at the people who are around you. And you'll make some connections with people who have the same heart that you do because they're serving in the same way. And Paul said, that's where I discovered my family. It was in serving. And Timothy became like a son to me. Timothy's dad, probably not a believer. We don't know if he was, but the fact that Timothy was raised halfway in one world and halfway in the secular world hints to that. And here Paul came along, and Timothy just started working with Paul, and the next thing you know, there was a connection that was like father and son. And he said, we served together. He goes on to say, so I'm going to send him to you as soon as I can. I'm hoping I can come see you myself. And then he goes on in verse 25 to talk about Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus was connected to Paul in so many ways, and all of the traits that we just saw about Timothy are traits that we also see about Epaphroditus. As we read, he's my brother, my fellow worker, my fellow soldier. He's your messenger, but he ministered to my need. Epaphroditus, like Timothy, was like family to Paul. Now, He calls Epaphroditus my brother. He called Timothy my son. Epaphroditus was probably a little older than Timothy and maybe would be offended by being called his son. I know I've had some people come up to me and say, you know, Pastor Dave, you're just like a father to me. And I'm like, I'm not old enough to be your father. So brother is better, you know, and that's kind of where it was at. But he goes, we connected because we served together. Again, how did he get to know them? They were serving alongside each other. Not sitting there really nurturing their relationship, but turning their attention on reaching out to others and ministering to others. And that's where that connection is discovered. But with Epaphroditus, he adds something. He's not just a fellow servant, a fellow worker to me, but he's also a fellow soldier. And this is another related concept when it comes to friendship. If someone's your friend, they're going to be there when you're going to war, when you're in a battle. Life has battles. Life has challenges. And sometimes you're in the heat of warfare. And sometimes while you're in warfare, you're looking across barrel to barrel with a person that you thought was your friend, and they're shooting at you and you're shooting at them. Guess what? They weren't your friend. When you're in a battle, a real friend is going to be back to back with you. They'll have your back and they'll be battling with you. They will point out to you where you're wrong like a fellow soldier would point out. But the one thing that you have to know with real friendship is, I know if I'm in a war, you're on my side. I know you'll support me. I know you'll be there with me and we can battle together. And friendship does that. Friendship isn't something that you say, man, if it really gets sticky, I'm not sure where you'll be. And battles and trials are good things that happen to us because that, more than anything else, lets us find out who our friends are. Now, I suspect that many of you feel that, you know, as I think about friends, I'm just so sorry when I think of all the friends I've lost over the years. Well, guess what? You haven't ever lost a friend. All you do is find out who your friends are by the process of elimination. People you think are friends drop by the wayside, and what's left, those are your real friends. That's okay, you don't need a lot of them. But you need to have some that you know they're going to be on your side. They're going to be pulling for you. They believe in you. And that's what Paul felt about Epaphroditus. He goes on to say he was longing for you all. Again, we see that compassion. Epaphroditus wasn't just some guy who goes, yeah, I really care. He was so concerned that it was freaking Paul out. And again, this whole passage with going, yeah, he got sick, he was about to die, and then you guys were worried about him, and he was worried that you were worried, and then I was worried that you were worried that he was worried, and we're all a mess. See, that's what happens when you really care. It's like, wow, we are so connected. And he said, if nothing else, you know about Epaphroditus. Man, this guy sincerely cared. He had that kind of a heart. And he was working alongside me. And obviously, he wasn't thinking of himself. He's no narcissist. He's pouring himself out for others. And Paul's going, man, I love to have a friend like this. And as you read on down through the passage, he said, receive him, therefore, verse 29, in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem or high honor, because for the work of Christ, he came close to death. Talk about putting Christ first. He was doing what Christ wanted him to do and laying his life on the line. And the next line, he says, not regarding his life. That word for not regarding is a Greek word that referred to professional gamblers. It's parabaleo, and they would call gamblers parabales because they were people who would lay it all on the line. They were people who would take chances and risks. And what he's saying is, this guy gambled his very life. He laid it on the line and was willing to face death in order to minister to me and to you. And friendship involves risks. Sometimes, to be a real friend, you have to risk the very friendship in order to do what a friend does. To talk to someone about an area where they have a blind spot and they need to be corrected, and you realize if they take it wrong, this friendship is over. But a real friend says, I'll take that chance. I'll risk my life if I have to, because I trust in this friendship enough, and I trust in Jesus enough, that I'll go ahead and lay it all on the line. And that's what Epaphroditus did, risking, gambling his very life, because being a good friend was that important to him. And so he supplied what was lacking in your service toward me. Two amazing guys. Teach us a lot about how to be friends and how to pick friends. As we go through and we reflect on, what does it mean to really be selfless? What does it mean to really care? Not that surfacey kind of caring, but to really care deeply, so much so that you'd risk your life, that you would battle together. What does it mean to serve alongside someone? To enjoy serving God together, being a part of the same team. What's that like? What's that kind of loyalty to God like? Devotedness to Jesus Christ being that way? That's friendship. And each one of us has an opportunity to decide whether that's who and what we want to be. It'll be rare. And each one of us has a need for friends like that. Don't expect to have a bunch of them. Count yourself incredibly blessed if you have one or two, like Paul apparently did. But realize, you want to identify what a good friend is? Here's a pretty good passage that lets you know what to be looking for. But then finally, lest we become so discouraged because everyone we know falls short and we fall short ourselves, let's remember, we all have at least one friend like this, and that's Jesus. He didn't think of himself, he emptied himself. He was willing to risk life and actually give his life. He serves alongside us. He wants to work with us. And he says, I call you friends and you're sons of God. Your family to me. I want to be your family. I want you to be a part of who I am. Jesus in every way exemplifies friendship, and he wants to be your friend. And hopefully he is. He is whether you've discovered him or not. Maybe you've been relying on other things to be your friends. But honestly, what you've been trusting on instead of Jesus, maybe it's your earthly friends. Maybe it's fun or activities or money or career, whatever it is. It's going to let you down. Jesus is your real friend. Start with him. Put him first, and he will, through serving him, you'll be connected with incredible people. God's people are, as they surround you and as they work with you, again and again, they'll surprise you with what God can do through them and through you with them. But it starts with Jesus. And if you've never given your life to Jesus Christ, today is a good day to do that. That's where you need to start, really. To plug into him and to realize, okay, you, Jesus, are what a friend is all about. And if you will allow me to be your friend, then I'll start to try to be this kind of friend for others. And I'll look for these kinds of people to connect with so that I can create the kind of friendships that bring this kind of joy into life, that allow life to function the way it's supposed to. So this morning, before you leave or start decorating or whatever, if you've never met Jesus, we'll give you an opportunity after we sing the last song. There'll be men and women down here in the front who love to pray with people. So come on down to the front and meet your best friend, your closest friend, the one who has proven himself again and again. Connect with him. And then together with another brother or sister in the Lord, ask God to help you to be this kind of friend and to identify these kinds of friends so that finally your life can start working the way it's supposed to. For each of us, this is our call. What does it take to be a friend? What does it take to find a friend? And if we do it, we'll never be sorry. Life will be amazing. Life will be full of joy because we're truly connected with best friends, good friends, quality friends. Let's pray. Lord, how grateful we are that you became our friend. We didn't even know what friendship was until you befriended us. Lord, for some of us, we thank you because you've brought other friends along too, who we see you in them. And they've been there for us, and they've always supported us and loved us, and we thank you for them. There are other times when you've allowed us to be friends, and you've taught us how to do that as well, and that's a huge privilege. But Lord, there are also times when we fell short of real friendship, and times when we felt like we just couldn't pick them. It doesn't work. And so, Lord, continue to work in our lives the true meaning of friendship. And Lord, if there's anybody here today who hasn't met you personally, meet them today. Help them to become just overwhelmed with your friendship that will open the door to them creating connections that will last for eternity. And I thank you in Jesus' name.